I want to see it in action before I do this.
I'm like you. I want to wait and see.
Welcome to the Serotalk Podcast.
Serotalk Podcast.
Welcome to the Serotalk Podcast, your portal to the accessible digital lifestyle.
www.serotalk.com.
A production of Serotech Corporation, creators of System Access, the System Access Mobile Network, and SA2Go. Learn about new technology, cool software, useful websites, education, information, entertainment, user comments, and much more. And now, here's your host, Michael Loft.
Welcome to Serotalk. Podcast number 17. This is Michael Loft.
I'm Ricky Inger.
And this is Mike Calvo.
So much excitement going on right now. And you've got iPhone Viva.
Indeed.
And excited we should be.
I got a fever and the only thing that'll cure it is to pet my iPhone.
Well, stroke it gently. No need to rise temperatures any more than necessary, right? We can't help it. It's another one of those days of innuendo. Great stuff for the end of the year, folks. But before we go into the iPhone, let's talk about two things really quickly. First of all, we will be at both the ACB and NFB conventions. And Ricky, do you have the booth numbers for those?
Indeed, I do. For the ACB convention, which is in the Rosen Center Hotel in Orlando, we're going to be in booth 52. And for the NFB, we will have people on hand at the Detroit Renaissance downtown in booth C57. So whichever show you're attending this year, you're definitely going to have some Serotech folks to show you lots of great stuff, so come on by and check us out.
All of us will be there. We will actually have Samnet Radio out there. Michael will be doing his interview thing. Although we are all members of the Serotech team, Serotalk is dedicated to giving you, our consumer, our listener, our community, brothers and sisters, just kind of information on what's hot, what's not, what's cool, and what you guys can get us for Christmas. It's a great opportunity for you to come out, hang out with us, and lay your hands on some very cool things. I hate to use that word again, the iPhone. I really understand now why there's this love with it.
The other big announcement, Michael, you are traveling of all places to the National Press Club.
That's right.
Our big announcement. You're getting a little sneak peek here first, and we're going to invite you to check out the live unveiling.
Don't worry, I won't be unveiled. I'll be fully veiled. I'll be fully dressed, I promise. The Press Club in Washington, D.C. has been the site of many a historic announcement, and we thought it would only be appropriate to go to the National Press Club in Washington, D.C. to present what we consider to be a pretty historical announcement out of the many, I think, that Serotech has brought the industry. This is a product called Accessible Event. What it does, folks, is it allows you to attend presentations, whether they be online or even in a local venue like a classroom or an auditorium or whatever, with your PC or your note taker or your cell phone with a browser. The only limit is, of course, to the AT that you have installed, and you can listen and participate and interact with the presenter right through this technology without any kind of installation on the browser side. It's all browser-based. The only thing you need there is Flash 10 or later. And hopefully in the future, we will be supporting things like Flash Lite. But this is going to be a very cool product. We do acknowledge that there are other meeting products on the market that do an okay job at providing accessibility in an online webinar type of environment. Right now, the current products that are on the market are an all-or-nothing solution, meaning you have to use their technology, products like the TC conferencing software. Basically, go out there and use that in your enterprise by itself. The big thing that differentiates Accessible Event from any other product on the market is it works in conjunction with products like Live Meeting or Adobe Connect or WebEx or GoToMeeting. All of these different technologies, and basically we just sit there and send the same thing to AE that these products are sending to their sighted participants. And it's a very, very exciting technology. We invite you to visit with us at the event, virtually, of course. It's going to be at the Washington, D.C. Press Club at 2 p.m. Eastern, June 23rd. The cool thing is, of course, Michael, you're going to be broadcasting it over on Samnet Radio. And of course, on the show notes, right on the Cero Talk page, there will be a link to join the event directly. And you can actually see my PowerPoint and all of that and learn more about the technology and how it works with software like PowerPoint, Word, Excel, Internet Explorer, and Firefox. We expect for that list to grow as we get requests. But it's a very exciting time, historical announcement. Please do join us on the 23rd of June.
Go to cerotalk.com for the show notes. Tune into Samnet Radio, or if you have the means, definitely go to accessibleevent.com via the link that we provide at cerotalk.com, and you can see it in action. I would say June 19th has forever changed the access technology industry.
Absolutely. And what's interesting to me, and a little bit ironic, is that I was going to be the person who kind of took a wait-and-see approach and just subsisted on my Windows Mobile 5 platform.
Even Michael tweeted like that. I'm going to wait till you guys.
Yeah.
You did wait about 6 hours after the launch.
I did. Yeah. I was fine until about 3 o'clock. And just as the day progressed and I got angrier and angrier with my current phone, and I really think the collective consciousness was so focused on this iPhone that people out there were psychically influencing me to purchase this thing.
Direct emails of success stories.
Yeah. Yes, that too. There were people who had their iPhones as early as 7:15. I, again, did not pre-order mine, but I decided, hey, you know, I think I will go down to the Apple Store. And turned out the Apple Store in the mall did, in fact, have them in stock. So I went and stood in line, and it was very cool because the people in line with me, I got a lot of attention because of the dog. And that
is it for the dog, the iPhone?
That's right.
Is the dog read the phone?
Will the dog be using it? Will he be using a patented nose screen technology or something to dial your numbers for you? But no, people actually in line knew about the fact that accessibility was built into the iPhone. So the mainstream actually sort of picked up on this, and nobody asked me, how are you going to use that? It's a touch screen and you can't do that. People were knowledgeable, not only the people in line, but the Apple Store employees as well. So got the iPhone after standing in line for about an hour. I was going to wait till I got home and put VoiceOver on it myself, but I decided, you know what? I'm here. Go ahead and turn it on. So they did. And as I'm walking through the mall with this iPhone in my bag, it vibrates. And it's Mr. Calvo calling me.
Yeah, so. I was like, hey, I'm your first call on your iPhone, because I knew she was going down there. And I was kind of ticked off because I had gotten my phone earlier that day and it was not working.
Thousands of people got a please wait while we process your request type message.
Well, you got yours activated, what, on Sunday?
Yeah, it was 54 hours if we're counting time.
I went to the Apple Store on Saturday and sat there for 2 hours and got my phone activated at the store as well. We did find that there were some issues, though, with all of the screen readers when it comes to loading apps from the App Store. You're going to want to load the first app, at least, from the App Store and agree to, there's a little checkbox that you have to agree on the phone to the Apple terms and conditions and whatnot. And if you do that, whether it be with Windows Eyes or with System Access on the PC side, your iTunes is going to go kerplunky and it's not going to work for you. So I'm sure that the folks at GW are looking into it as we are, and we're going to fix that problem soon. Maybe Apple can give us all a hand, you know. We're real excited about what this means, and to celebrate our excitement, every Thursday we have tech talks on the System Access Mobile Network, or on the SAMNET. And for the first time in SAMNET history, what we're going to do is we're going to open up this tech talk to the entire community. So on Thursday night, you can make your way to cerotalk.com, and there will be a link there for you to join in on this tech talk. And what it's going to be a panel of a few people that have the iPhone that we're going to just talk about it. The iPhone has brought up a lot of controversy in the community. I mean, what do you guys think? Do you see the controversy, or is it just me?
Oh, no. There has definitely been some controversy in the sense that there were people who were just adamantly against the idea that a touchscreen could be used productively. And then there were people who were kind of against it because they just didn't care about all the hype and they were happy with their current solution. And then, of course, there are the people, it's Apple, it's got to be great, I want to go get one.
So where do you fall in that? Because we've each got different experiences. Ricky, you've really not used a smartphone per se. I mean, I know you've had your
AT&T. Mine was a quote smartphone. It was Windows Mobile 5, and it was a keypad type phone, which I could do texting and I could do web browsing in a very cumbersome way. I didn't really have voice dialing capabilities, and so I really used my phone as a phone, and that's about it. And when I got the iPhone, I was pretty motivated to like it because this was a replacement for my existing phone and I didn't intend to replace it again unless I had buyer's remorse during that first 30 days. But when I initially got the phone, it was a little bit strange. Doing things on a touchscreen was pretty alien, but I got the hang of it pretty quickly. Of course, I can say I was a little bit obsessed with getting the hang of it pretty quickly. But I did that, and I love it not only for just the interesting way in which you navigate and are able to see things spatially on the touchscreen, and you're able to move around very easily with it. So I love it not only for that, but for its capabilities, like the ability to do Pandora streaming radio and to read email very easily on the phone, and just things that were entertaining or productive that I never saw on my previous, quote, solution.
Right. But Michael, you came, your first phone was an N82, your first smartphone, my sixth or seventh smartphone is my N82. What did you think, man? I mean, how did you come from, for example, you've never really used one of these QWERTY keyboards on a phone. So, you know, you've always T9'd and kind of texted your way. And things like KNFB Reader, of course, which are not available for the iPhone, which is makes a very compelling reason to keep your N82. What were your impressions besides that problem with the activation servers and whatnot? Was yours love at first sight?
The first issue, I think there's three factions out. There's people that are just open to it, want the latest and greatest, and excited that touchscreens are now available. There's the second group of the naysayers who I believe, in some cases, profit off of proprietary AT hardware. And there's the third group, which I think was me, literally a year ago. Bought this phone, Canopy Reader, Talks, you know, and some apps, and probably almost 2G on this device. And I'm thinking, this is going to have to be really good. And I think there's a lot of people in that sentiment thinking, well, I've already spent this money. So they need to argue to justify it. Honestly, I was blown away. I was out in the car playing with it. Instant gratification, amazement. This touchscreen works exactly as claimed. I'm just blown away. And now I'm on an equal par and I'm doing things much easier in certain cases. While it certainly takes a few hours and you find yourself frustrated maybe once or twice, when I compare learning the Symbian phones, this is so much easier. It, in many ways, is so much straightforward. And one of my concerns was that would it work with third-party apps? The built-in iPhone apps are cool, but I wanted to know, would it work with some third-party applications? That's the power of the iPhone, and we're hearing some great stories to that effect.
One of the things that we really haven't touched on is this is a GSM phone, and if you are on AT&T and you had like an N82, you can just take your SIM card out of your iPhone and you can pop it back into your N82, I believe, and it'll work the same as the old one did. So you can actually, you know, have the best of both worlds. So when you want to use that $2,000 N82 or you want to use your iPhone, you know, you can jump in between them. And, you know, it's not an either or type situation. You don't need to contact your carrier and change the ESN and all that stuff like you do with a CDMA phone. So that's the beauty of GSM. It's really cool feeling. It's smooth and it's curvy and it's got these, you know, neat button on the front and all that. You say, wow, this is a neat toy, you know. And as you start to use it, for me, I first looked at it and said, how the heck am I going to do this? It was not 100% intuitive for me when I first got into it. But I stuck with it simply because a lot of sighted folks said the same thing about the iPhone when they got it. Takes me a while to get productive. And as the weekend progressed, I'd say that feeling lasted for about 20 minutes, 30 minutes, where I got out and we were at the mall and, you know, I needed to call my wife. And I was able to make a phone call with no training on it. Again, being a smartphone user, though, I know that a smartphone is capable of so much more. I was just kind of hesitant. What I found now is that actually using the gestures, Windows has strived for years to be, on the PC side at least, the kind of interface that you see the same thing everywhere. You know, you hit the Alt key and you get file, edit, view, tools, favorites, whatever, help, all that kind of stuff. And there's a certain amount of continuity to Windows applications. I would say there's that and more with the iPhone. The iPhone allows me to pick up just about any iPhone application that is accessible. And the thing that I found really differentiates the applications from being accessible or not is the fact that the buttons aren't labeled. It's that simple. There are buttons, like in the Pandora application, which slows the phone down immensely when using text-to-speech. Really bad. You get beyond that, but Pandora's listening, hey, look into that, will you? Because we like it. The fact is that there's buttons in there that just say button, 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 button. We have that problem in Windows, man. I mean, we have that problem in Symbian. We have that problem in Windows Mobile. That's not a huge deterrent to me. That's about the only accessibility issue I found. Everything else, Apple's pretty much figured out a way for. I don't like the voice control too much on the phone. Maybe it's me. Maybe it's the way I talk. It just doesn't seem to work very well for me. Is it working
good
for you guys?
It works beautifully for me.
100% success with it thus far.
Yeah,
but I make sure to speak a little more slowly or clearly, make sure I put space between each digit as I speak.
I'm actually really bad about it. I will talk like the voice control app. Call 6122, which is really stupid and people always laugh at me, but at the same time, it's also very effective to do it that way.
Once you put the names in of your contacts, and you can just say, call Ricky or call Michael or call Jay.
Right.
Whatever,
that's one very cool feature of this is that when you sync it with your Outlook contacts, you can just say call the first name of the person so you don't have to fully specify the name.
I was able to sync with my Exchange. Coming from a Windows environment, I found that T9 was great for me. So when I went from the Motorola Q to the N82, I was back in the world of using T9. Now I'm back to texting again with a keyboard. And I find the keyboard a little less cumbersome than, say, the Motorola Q keyboards or the PPC 6700 or the iMate Jam. I think I had one for a little while. I find it a little less cumbersome, but I still find the keyboard a little cumbersome. But the thing is that we're going to be able to send MMS, which is voice messages. So if somebody sends me a text message and I don't feel like answering with my typing, I can just send back a voice message. I mean, hey, what the heck? I don't care. So there are millions of ways to get what you need out of this device. I'm really, really enjoying it. I think I'm going to keep it. I think I'm going to use it. I think I found the type of interface and the type of phone I'm going to be using for a long time. It makes sense. It really has done a lot for me as far as just in the short time I've had it. This doesn't just take a brick out of the blind ghetto wall, guys. This knocks a huge chunk of that wall down.
Absolutely. This is the first device to truly be fully accessible. I know that there are the, the LG phones like the Envy, which can sort of read texting and sort of allow you to do texting and have some of the menus accessible. It was definitely not a fully accessible phone, and this certainly is.
Every application on the phone that comes with it.
The Compass.
Apple didn't lie. Apple didn't BS us. They said what it was, and it is what it is. It works, and it works well. For a 1.0, this is incredible. And
it's spectacular.
Yeah, I think it's awesome.
I have to say, the learning curve at first, there's definitely a little bit of frustration at times, as there probably is with any phone. It's like Mike was talking about the QWERTY keyboards on the phones like the Motorola Q and things like that. I've had my hands on phones like that, and I couldn't imagine typing quickly on a phone like that. And with the iPhone, I've actually gotten pretty fast at it. I don't know what constitutes fast texting because I, again, never did this with a QWERTY keyboard, but I'm pretty proficient at it now. And I can check my email on the phone. It's very easy. And just doing a two-finger swipe down to read the entire email. I can respond to email. I can look at the weather. I can surf the web. So basically, I can be productive or I can be entertained with just this little device. You can play podcasts.
I got this Fandango application. You put it into your phone, and then it says, would you like Fandango to use your location information?
Right.
Yes. So now, then a window pops up, and you can swipe your finger across, and it'll say movies or theaters. So you tap on theaters or movies, whatever, and movies comes up. over the weekend, we went to go see The Proposal, and it was right there. And as you tap on it, and boom, it brings up theaters that are like a mile away from my house. And as you swipe your finger, it's telling you this movie synopsis, it's telling you the theater show times. You can even buy tickets online with this phone, and it's all the same interface. That's what I meant before. This is all the same interface. And once these application providers start to understand what we need as blind consumers in the accessibility world, as part of the accessibility paradigm for these apps, and hopefully, and I'm going to push very hard, and I would suggest that listeners of this podcast spread the word to also ask Apple to make accessibility part of the criteria for apps in the App Store. I think that Apple would actually do that. They're not going to hold a flight simulator or a car racing game to that standard, but things that are obviously textual or informational in nature. I mean, accessibility at least is a very strong recommendation because of us as a consumer market, I think is going to be something that Apple would love to push in the future. One of the things I wanted to touch on before I shut up is the fact about productivity. I read a very interesting article put out by someone in the community whom I have a great deal of respect for in their journalistic views. And this person was concerned about productivity. And I thought that they brought up some very valid points about productivity. And I would just like to say for the record, I've experienced probably about a 10 to 15% loss of productivity for the weekend. It is growing as I find myself just on my spare time playing with the phone between phone calls or whatever. And I'm building that productivity back up. So I would just like to say that as far as productivity, listen, practice makes perfect. You're going to definitely lose some productivity at first, but I think that's with anything. But with this device, I think you're going to get it back. And the wow factor, the fact that you can do all of these different things, including an iPod and everything, it's very cool. By the way, I got to ask you guys, how much iPhone swag or accessories have you bought for your phones?
Approximately zero things for me. And the reason for that is that my Apple Store did not have a good selection of things like cases and that sort of thing, which is what I'm looking for. Now, that's not to say that I'm not going to get lots of accessories and swag and such, just that I haven't done so yet.
Michael, I've acquired three items, one piece of software called Wonder Radio, giving you thousands of stations to listen to on your phone. Bought the Mofi juice pack. It's an extra battery, and you fit your phone into it, and that way you double the power.
Yeah, I got
the battery life. And then the other thing, when I was at the AT&T store, I got their nice black leather case to go with my black phone, and it just fits in there very nicely. It's custom fit.
With the Mofi or without it?
This would be without.
We got to review it one day on the podcast, but the Mofi is neat. It is truly an Apple-recommended product. It's an exclusive, only available through the Mofi website and through Apple stores. You put your phone in this thing and it makes the phone a little bit bigger. And when I say a little bit bigger, I mean a little bit, but it also makes the phone more solid in your hand. And the cool thing about this thing is the whole thing is a battery. It's flat and curvy and nice looking, and it's a battery, and it does double.
They gave the example for the 3GS of standby of 270 hours, but who's not going to touch their phone for 11 days? With any of these phones, whether you keep your Wi-Fi turned on or your 3G capabilities. There's a lot of things you can do. You dim, I was playing around, you can dim your display. We can use the screen curtain to actually turn off the display.
And so people can't be looking over your shoulder at what you're doing.
So there's a lot of things we can do that are going to alter the actual length of battery life. So your mileage is certainly going to vary. A few quick questions for you here. One, what was your thought on the voice chosen? The Samantha-type voice. I think everyone just assumed it was going to be Alex, and that's not the case.
I'm not a big fan of Samantha in general. I don't like her at all on the Victor. But on the iPhone, she's actually surprisingly palatable. I can't put my finger on what the difference is. Am I really a big fan of Samantha now? No, not so much. But she's sort of grown on me, and I don't really hate using the phone because of her voice. I would have preferred something different, but I'll live with it.
I would have liked Alex just because I think it's very cool but creepy when you have a text-to-speech engine that breathes. Come on.
Do you really want your phone breathing in your ear?
Don't
get me started. I could tell you about a remote control. But anyway, anybody who listens to Gadgets from CNET will know exactly what I mean. I found the voice interesting because it's the same voice that is used in Microsoft's voice command. I don't know if that's a Nuance voice. It very well may be. It is not my favorite voice, but I guess you get used to it. It is what it is. It's a voice.
One of the first things I noticed, and I'm not too upset because I know this is an easy fix because I've already seen where it varies, but is the default, even when you turn it up all the way, the volume of the voiceover. And I think it's a little low. I'm concerned about being in a crowded environment or even here.
You had mentioned that, and all of a sudden, a podcast for some reason went louder, and so did the voice, and it went really loud. And I noticed that 100% for the voice is not 100% for the iPod.
That's exactly right. They do have separate volumes. When VoiceOver is talking, you crank up the volume on VoiceOver, and that cranks up its volume specifically, not the volume of the ringer or the phone or whatever. The VoiceOver voice does sort of duck under the call volume, as it should. The problem with that is if you're dialing somebody who has an extension, if you don't have VoiceOver loud enough, it's a bit of a challenge to navigate the phone and double tap the keypad once the call is active and then enter that extension. But there are workarounds to that. Again, if VoiceOver is talking, you just press the up button on the volume control and it'll make Samantha louder and louder.
Well, the other thing you can do is when you have that particular problem, you can actually enter the person into your address book, into your contacts, and then you can put commas in there to pause it and then enter their extension. So I could actually call into the office and then put a few pauses and then dial an extension. And when I call that person, it'll automatically dial for me. So I don't need to worry about that. A few years ago, I wrote an article called The Power of Us about my first experiences going to these conferences and the NFB conference and the ACB conference and just conferences in general and how scared I was, even though I had pretty good mobility skills, how scared I was to be in this big hotel and how I was challenged to get out there and do my job and do what I had to do and intermingle. And when I got out there, I realized that there were other blind people that were in the same boat as I was. And what we did was we got together and we figured out how to do this and how to do that. And then we would all ask a sighted person. And interestingly enough, I found that sighted people were less intimidated by a big group of blind people asking a question versus an individual asking a question. I don't know why. Maybe there's a psychologist amongst the listeners who can write in and answer why. But I don't know why, but the fact is that I learned that weekend about the power of us, and that is what I'm finding here with the iPhone and how many people are tweeting about it, how many people are doing podcasts like this, conversations like this that take place on chat lines and on in chat rooms and different mediums that we communicate as blind people. And I think that this is very exciting because I think that we're finally at a place in our community where we are being heard by product and service providers. I was telling my wife over the weekend, it's amazing how just a vision builds and how a vision grows. And the Serotech vision for accessibility for everyone, accessibility on a level playing field, and blind consumers being accepted as blind consumers, not as people who need a handout, but who are people with money in their pocket and ready to spend it if they like a particular product. I'm actually seeing that realized before my very eyes, ears. I'm very excited about what this means for us as a community, what it implies, and how it's going to change, I think, the social paradigm just overall for blind people. And I would invite you to join us on Thursday for this chat. It's not going to be so much a tech talk about, oh, I like this and I didn't like that and the other. But I want to really get into what this means for us as a community. How are we going to leverage this platform? It's got 40 million customers right now using the iPhone worldwide, and there are going to be more. Estimates show that if there was a $99 price point, which there is, on an iPhone, that Apple would double its market share, which means that they should have, within the next year, 80 million people using this product, which is not a number to sneeze at. It is a very compelling story. I think that touchscreens are here to stay, whether it be that you're using the iPhone, whether you're using other phones, like my wife has a Samsung phone that she's very much in love with, that it works well for her, and it's all touch. And there are various touch phones out there. I think touch is here to stay, and I think the fact that if we can come up with a common, universal touch interface that blind people can use on any device, I think that that's going to benefit us more than any screen reader ever has. Yes, the output is very important, but also the interface. And that is a place where, yeah, I believe that Serotech has come real close to providing a very simple screen reader interface, but it still isn't what I'd like to see, which is I think that interfaces need to be intuitive. They need to understand their user, and they need to be able to know what their user is going to do, and they need to provide the easiest way to access whatever information or function you're trying to access is. And I think that this product comes very close to that. I'm just very, very excited about where it's going.
What third-party apps have either of you added to your phone?
I've added the Facebook app to my phone, which is fully accessible. I installed a program called Twitterific, which had unlabeled buttons, but I could use the Twitter timeline. And I discovered from the V iPhone list that there's a program called Twittilator Pro, which is it's a paid app, not a free app, but it does work well for Twitter.
Yeah, Twitter phone doesn't work. Twitter phone doesn't work. It did not work at all for me either. A bunch of labeled buttons.
I also put Pandora on the phone, and I will say that I did need sighted assistance to sign up, whether it be on the phone or on the web. Now, that may not be everyone's experience, but it was mine. Once I created an account, though, I was able to go in and create a station, and each time I launch Pandora, that station begins to play. So those are the iPhone apps I've installed so far. This will be a total travesty if these are not accessible, but somebody on the V iPhone list was asking about the iFart application. I have not tested it. You'd think that would have been one of the first things, but I haven't gotten there yet. Can't comment on the accessibility or lack thereof.
Actually, that's one that Brian would probably test.
My other question has to do with social networking, and you addressed that in the apps you've installed. What have you been able
Facebook
to do?
I got Facebook in there also.
And what have you been able to do?
I haven't found anything that I was unable to do per se. I was able to update my Twitter status just using a text message rather than a client or an app, and I'll install Twitter later and let you know how that works. I'm sure you'll be able to reply to messages and read your timeline and things like that with it. With Facebook, it works extremely well. In fact, it's a much more positive experience than it is on the web currently.
Probably better than even System Access in its current rendition of the current
page. Yes, that is correct.
So you can write on people's walls and
yep, you can actually upload photos that
your mother teach you that writing on people's walls isn't polite.
I know, the graffiti, it's horrible. But yeah, you can upload photos or video that you've taken. You can update your statuses, comment on things. So social networking, at least.
Have you tried videoing yet?
I don't actually know where that's located.
Oh, that's right in the camera. So when you bring up the camera, you can do either stills or you can do video. I wonder if you're going to be able to just send right from there, because I know you can upload to YouTube right from the video application in the phone. I wonder if you're going to be able to.
I don't know if you could send right to Facebook. That would be nice.
That would be cool. I have not played with the Facebook application as much as I'd like to. I've been listening to my podcasts and stuff. I do wish that this thing would download podcasts automatically on its own, like my N82 does. That's one of those things that I want. But maybe there's a different podcatcher or something. I don't know.
Windows mobile phones come by default with some sort of messenger like MSN, and the iPhone does not. And I haven't located either an app that combines things like the Socializer or something just for MSN, which that's where the majority of my contacts are. So haven't done that.
Play with the voice memos, and I guess there's a way to attach them to a calendar so they'll play at specific times. So I want to figure that out. Very exciting stuff.
Edit audio on that thing.
I'm curious how we'll be able to do that. Any little caveats you want to tell people that might save them some time as they get started? I would say RTFM, read the fun manual.
Read the manual and talk to people. Help each other out, man. I mean, this is one of those things where we have been on the phone to each other all weekend at various times and just experiencing the thing and answering questions of one another. And because just everybody uses different techniques. Ricky has taught me a lot over the weekend about how she finds stuff, what works for her. I hope I've given her some information as to what I found in Michael. It really is one of those things where, yes, the manual is pretty good, but again, with all due respect to Apple, it seems to have been written for blind folks by sighted folks, and I may be dead wrong. I felt from reading the Apple documentation that it was a bolted-on application, and in using it and playing with it, that couldn't be further from the truth statement. It works just wonderfully, so hats off to Apple. Awesome, awesome.
Yeah, I was concerned when the voiceover part was the last chapter 25 in the manual, but there were some specifics in chapter 1 to help people get started, so I was impressed once I really start looking through it.
I'd love to see a tutorial from some very entrepreneurial blind person. Mike Arrigo, do one, man.
He is opposed to it because it's tied to AT&T, and he's not alone. There are other people who feel that way as well.
Oh, I'm going to unlock mine first chance I get. There's no doubt about it. And you know what, AT&T, if you're listening, I'm going to pay my $175 and take my phone where I please. unlocking your phone is not illegal. It is your right. In fact, in 2006, the Attorney General in 2006, I believe it was, or there was a librarian of the Library of Congress, actually wrote an opinion on the fact that unlocking your phone, and it was brought into law, does not break copyright. So if anybody tries to tell you that, that's not true. Jailbreaking your phone, which means that you can install applications from other sources besides the App Store, is in question. I wouldn't do it just because I want it to work the way that Apple made it work. Apple did not do what AT&T does. Apple's just a business, and they're trying to promote their product. And part of the thing of promoting a new product is to link yourself up to a carrier. I understand that. But you know what? I don't care about that. That's their problem. If I pay my get-out-of-jail card from AT&T and take it back to T-Mobile, favorite choice, that's my business. Apple does not endorse, nor does it say bad things to you about unlocking your phone. It's your phone. Do what you want with it. Just make sure that you don't void that Apple warranty. So jailbreaking is not something that I would strongly suggest at this time, unless you're willing to have a serious discussion with the folks at the Apple Store explaining how you might have bricked your phone. I can understand where Mike would take some angst to that, as do I. I think that AT&T taxes the heck out of people for this phone. And I'm not talking about in the purchase. Listen, I'd rather buy the thing unlocked if I could for $700 or whatever. The minimum tax is, what, $69, I think, if you want 450 minutes plus unlimited data. And then if you want unlimited text messaging, is another $20 on top of that?
That's correct. Like $5 for 200, 15 for 1500, or 20 unlimited. My issue with AT&T is that they limit you to 10 megabyte file transfers.
It's like, it's unlimited data as long as it's 10 megabytes. Wait a minute, do I get an all-I-can-eat buffet or not? So this is a problem, and I believe that, you know, AT&T needs to get its head out of its behind and stop thinking that we're in the 1970s where they can charge people per megabyte or per kilobyte, because sooner or later, AT&T, your chickens are going to come home to roost. And let me tell you, I know a lot of people in the sighted community that just hate AT&T. They love the iPhone, hate the carrier, and that just is not a good attitude to have.
Not at all.
So that's all I have to say about that.
But you folks in Canada or in the UK and elsewhere are having lots of fun because you do have tethering and MMS and all the things that, for whatever mysterious reason, we do not yet have with AT&T. How is it they're not?
Oh, it's simple, man.
We'll make you wait, and then if you've waited long enough, you aren't going to balk at paying the 30 extra bucks for tethering or whatever it's going to be.
They'll do something. I heard conflicting reports. I heard MMS is going to be free or included in your $20 a month. I doubt that. I did hear, though, that tethering is going to be $55 for unlimited data with tethering. So instead of $30, it's going to be $55. Those are not confirmed from AT&T. That's just kind of the blogosphere and the buzzosphere and the rumor mill.
I was told by an AT&T employee that tethering and MMS would be available in early August. And I go, really? And he goes, well, that's what we're told.
I just don't like AT&T at all. They keep rebuilding themselves or recreating themselves. Hopefully they'll, like I said, stop looking at data like they did at long distance minutes. Remember, AT&T, that's what got you deregulated back in the 80s to begin with. So stop it.
Yeah, wake up and do it right.
Join us Thursday evening. We hope you'll take part in the tech chat. If not, listen to it on Samnet Radio. But
AE on Tuesday.
Yes, AE on Tuesday. So if you happen to hear this first, go to accessibleevent.com via the provided link or listen on Samnet Radio so you hear the exciting news there. Again, on Thursday night, if you have a question, and this is not a question of how do I do this on the phone, but if you have a question in terms of the change and the effect that this is going to have on the AT industry, please submit it to our panel, resources at serotalk.com, or even call the Blab Line. We can play it that way as well. If you call toll-free 866-997-BLAB, we do want to hear from you.
So I've got my phone on, and there is an unlock button on the screen, and I'm just going to tap this.
Unlock button.
I've done a double tap. There is a sleep-wake button on the top right of the unit, and obviously it's not on the touch screen. It's on this top right of the rectangle here. So that's what I did. I held that in to power on the phone. And then I had the unlock button, which I then just tapped, and it's just a quick, very light. You could really hammer on the thing if you wanted to, but it isn't necessary to do that. So I now have this on and it is unlocked, and I'm just going to begin sliding my finger around the
iTunes
screen.
App Store, Comfist, iPod, Comfist, page 1 of 2.
And you
Depart.
Hear
mail.
how,
phone, one new item.
As I move my finger around, I get a click as soon as I am over an application. And I happen to know that the phone icon, along with Safari and iPod and a couple of other things, those things are always going to be located at the bottom portion of the screen. So it's a row of icons down there at the bottom, and those stay there. They're always there when you're on the home screen. So you know exactly where to go and touch those. But let's assume that you didn't have an idea of where things were spatially. You can do what's called a flick gesture. And this is sort of like flicking a piece of lint off your clothing. I'm holding the phone and I'm going to flick my index finger to the right across the phone, just a quick
mail, Safari, iPod.
So this is moving the focus from icon to icon without my having to know where that icon is spatially.
Voice memos, weather, maps, stocks, YouTube.
So I can flick through mail. Those things.
Phone, one new item.
Now my phone has one new item. I'm going to double tap on the phone. And note that as I move my finger around and I find the icon that I want, I can lift up my finger and then I can double tap anywhere on the screen once that app is focused. I don't have to be exactly over the app as you would need to be using a mouse, for example. If you move the mouse cursor to an app, you got to keep that mouse cursor there before you double click it, otherwise you're clicking elsewhere. But in this case, again, I'm focused on the app that I want, so I can double tap anywhere on the screen. And we get that sound indicating that I have tapped something, and the little blah indicates that the app is now open and ready to go.
Deleted messages. 0%
and
adjustable.
I'm just moving.
Deleted message. Callback. Dim. Button. 0%. Adjustable. Deleted messages.
Moving around here.
Speaker. Button. Voicemail. Greeting. Button. Voicemail. Speaker. Deleted messages. 0%. Callback. Dim. Delete. Dim. Favorites. Button. Recents. One eye. Contacts. Button. Keypad. Button.
So I kind of moved through here. I have one new item that I'm not going to look at currently. I moved through this phone application that we've opened, and I'm going to double tap on the keypad.
Keypad selected, blank phone number, text field.
And I have blank phone number, text field, and now I have just a standard configuration keypad. So
star.
Things are located
seven.
Where I would expect them to be.
8, 9, 6.
Now, the clicks that you're hearing are not indicative that a number has been entered, but rather that I'm hovering over one. If I want to enter that number, I can
6, 1, 4, 4.
And I accidentally entered a 4, whereas I intended to enter a 1. I'm going to move to the bottom right of my screen. There's a voicemail button, but
delete
just above
button.
That, there's a delete button. I'm going to double tap
delete
that.
Button, 4.
And it tells me that it deleted the 4.
7, 4, 1, 1, 5, 2, 2, 2, 4, 4, 5, 6, 6, 5, 7, 4, 4, 8, 8, 1, 1, 8, 8. Keypad selected, delete button, call button.
And now I can double tap the call button, which is in this row along with delete and voicemail and that kind of thing. And as I tap it, that in essence is how you navigate around the dial pad.
Please press 3 now to reach technical support for remote access.
And I have just dialed the don't intend to dial an extension here, so I'm going to double tap with two fingers, and the call is ended. The phone has two modes, one of which is the normal mode where sound comes out of the earpiece, and the other is the speaker mode. And it does this usually correctly in that it senses if the phone is being held up to your face, and if it is, then it routes the sound to the earpiece. And as you move the phone away from your face, it automatically switches to speakerphone mode without your having to click a button to tell it to do that.
Now, I love the voice dialing. Now, granted, yeah, phones have had that for a while, but so far it's gotten it right every time.
Yes, the voice dialing is quite nice, and I can do, for example, I have my work number listed as Saratec Corporation, but I can do this, call Saratec.
Calling Saratec Corporation, word.
And you see it automatically recognized as Saratec Corporation.
Calling Saratec. Rotech Corporation, the Accessibility Anywhere people. If you know the extension of the person you're trying to reach, you may enter properly.
So I'm going to double tap to end the call. And now I'm back in a text field with a blank number if I wanted to dial somebody else. Now, a lot of people have sort of wondered about, hey, you can't do multitasking on the iPhone. What's up with that? Well, no, you can't per se. Whenever you're finished with a particular application, whether it be the phone application or mail or whatever, you can press the home screen and return to your home screen where your focus will land on the application that you just closed. So I landed on phone, one new item. If I were to go to mail would open and I would be in the same place that I was when I last left mail. So if I were composing a message, I would come back into the mail application with that message composition window still open.
One new item, mail. Subject, text field, is editing, auto cap on.
And I was, in fact, composing a message, so it brought me back to the message that I was composing.
Capital T, capital R. To, render at, text field. CCBCC.
And I'm scrolling down the page with CC and BCC, and you'll notice this sound. This simply indicates that you're over a portion of the screen which does not have any sort of clickable element on it.
Text field, auto correction on, auto cap on.
Now I'm in a text field with auto correction and auto cap on.
Text field is editing, auto correction on, auto cap on.
And now I'm editing here so I can slide around the QWERTY keyboard.
Capital F.
And you'll notice that as I slide around, it's announcing what I am above.
Capital F, capital G, capital H, cap, T, Y, T, U, I, U. More numbers, more letters. Space, more letters. Period. Period. I.
What you can do is sort of hold the phone and have one finger navigating around the screen and have another finger sort of hovering over a portion of the screen and ready to tap. So rather than double tapping as I was just doing as I hovered over the letter that I wanted, so for example, if I'm over G right now and I double tap, rather than doing that, I can move around and, for example, find the R.
Space, great.
And so I just type the word great. And in that instance, again, rather than double tapping, I moved around with one hand and tapped the letter with the other. And it seems to be a little more fluid because you don't have to lift your finger from the keypad in order to enter that letter. So as soon as you're over it, you just tap with the other hand and you can move on to the next letter. I moved my tapping hand to, say, the top of the phone, and my scrolling around finger was scrolling around on the QWERTY keyboard, which is kind of in the bottom third portion of the touch screen. And so once my hands were out of the way of each other, rather than, say, being in the way when I was trying to type the letter A, I would find that my other finger was kind of right in front of where I wanted to tap, and it wasn't working very well. So the two-fingered type method definitely speeds things up a bit. And you sort of get into a rhythm once you start to text and you're holding the phone comfortably, whether it be kind of sitting on your lap or in the palm of your left hand, maybe, however you hold the phone. Once you are comfortable with a way to hold it and you get into texting or writing an email, there's a rhythm to it, and you kind of glide, tap, glide, tap, glide, tap, and you're able to get pretty quick with it. We can return to the home screen here. And one thing I do want to show is that you have status icons that are always at the top of the screen.
Wi-Fi signal, status bar item, 109 p.m., status bar item. Two bars, signal strength, status bar item. AT&T network, status bar item. 100% Wi-Fi signal, status bar item.
So those are across the top of the screen. I'm able to check my battery status, my Wi-Fi connection status, all that fun stuff, which is quite nice. And the one thing that's very nice for me, this is going to prevent me from carrying two different devices, is
iPod.
The iPod application. And since the last thing that I was doing here was podcasts, I landed on the podcasts button. Had I been listening to music last, that's where I would have ended up. But let's just do podcasts here.
Button, more, button, podcasts. Search, text field, Bill Bell's podcast, two episodes, contains unplayed items.
And you'll notice that this is sort of the same interface as iTunes itself. You have the search field, then you have the grid containing the various podcasts that you're subscribed to. I have Bill Bulis's podcast there first because it's doing it alphabetically.
Three episodes contains unplayed. Bill Bulis's podcast. Buzz Out Loud. Three episodes contains unplayed items.
Buzz Out Loud from CNET. I can
Buzz
open
out loud.
This.
Podcasts button.
And now I'm flicking
Buzz
to the
loud.
Right.
Search. Text. CNET.com. 996. You can fastest point obscenities. 40. 32. 40 and left. 6/12. Unplayed.
And now I can just
get more episodes. Videos. Button.
Move
get
around here. Whenever you're in the iTunes app, you can search for things to purchase and that sort of thing. But the iPod app, you can search for podcasts here, or you can find one that you already have downloaded.
CNET.com/16.
I can just double tap it. And then I could do a double tap to pause it, just as I would to end a call. And that's a double tap with two fingers. So this is the beauty of multi-touch, is that you can have several different types of gestures. You can have a 1, 2, and 3 tap for a single finger, likewise for two fingers, and likewise for three fingers. You can also do the flick with a 1, 2, or 3 finger gesture, both horizontally and vertically, and all of those gestures have different meanings. That's the reason that reading the manual is such a good idea, just to get an idea of what these gestures are and get used to using them. And once you do, it really is quite intuitive. For example, moving from one page of apps to another on your home screen, you can swipe with three fingers to the right or the left to move forward and back between pages, and it sort of feels like you're moving a piece of paper out of the way to get to what's underneath it. And if you want to do a say-all and read what's on the screen in its entirety, you just do a double finger swipe downward, which makes sense. You know, read all this stuff that I just slid my finger across.
Do you want to just show like a web page like SerilTalk.com?
We could do that.
Home.
So I'm going to return to the home screen here.
One new item.
And
iPod. Phone, what, mail, Safari.
Double tap Safari, which is
Safari.
Always oh, going to be
www.pandora.com/iPhone/4FC83DAP.
The third icon on the bottom of the screen. So now we're going to input serotalk.com.
SerilTalk.
There is a .com button at the bottom of the screen when you're entering URLs. There's also a slash and a period. So I double tapped the .com button or icon, which was at the bottom of Safari, because it's assumed, now that's not going to be everywhere, but in Mail and in Safari, that's going to show up because it's a pretty frequently used thing, as is the @ in the Mail application. So that made it far quicker to get to where I wanted to go. Now, I'm on the SerilTalk page, but I'd like to show one thing, and this is called the rotor. And so it's sort of like making a gesture like dialing an old rotary phone. I'm placing my finger on a link there, and I'm just kind of leaving my finger there. And now I'm going to swipe my middle finger, whereas I've got my index finger just kind of sitting there. I'm going to swipe my index finger kind of in a rotary motion.
Visited links, form elements, links. Visited link, form elements.
So I'm able to use this rotor to determine how I move through the page, and this kind of acts as what does the finger flicking do as I move through this page. I can look at it spatially.
Welcome to SerilTalk, your portal to the accessible digital lifestyle, using accessible technologies to enhance your life. Here you will find a twice monthly podcast, links to awesome software and online resources, and an interactive blog. Best of all, you shape the direction through sharing your experiences and resources.
So I just did a say-all with a two-finger downward flick. Now if I want to shut her up, I do that with a two-finger double tap. And now I'm going to move through elements on the page. Let's see, we've got it set for
N. Form elements. System access mobile network. Links.
Let's set that for links.
N. Sitago.com. Email. Resources. At. Saradoc.com. With email suggestions and useful resources for our Keys 4K12 audio segments. Link. Tech Chat 21 new NLS digital talking book player and overdrive book service. Heading level 2. Link.
So I'm moving through the links on this page with just flicking gestures. And I could alternatively have changed with my rotor to the form elements. And then I would be moving through edit box, then button, that kind of thing. And that's essentially how a web page works. And naturally, if I want to visit any of these things, I just double tap with a single finger, and it's going to open the page that that link points to or activate the form element.
Button.
And now if I'm done with Safari, I can press the home button.
Safari.
And I return to my home screen with the focus on Safari.
Thanks a lot for that, Ricky. And a lot of folks have been waiting to kind of hear it in action, hear the voice and hear the functionality. I mean, you can read the book all you want, but hearing it in action is very different. And we invite you folks to stay tuned. In weeks to come, we'll be doing greater detail as we learn about third-party apps and kind of go into more of the specifics. The product's been out 3 days as we record this, and for anyone to even attempt to try to cover this item in full is not realistic. But as you can see, it's very powerful.
Works out of the box, assuming that it's been activated by AT&T.
That's the issue.
We've discussed
right.
Our feelings about AT&T.
That's right. But normally you go there, you put in your zip code, last four of your social, and the thing registers, and off you go. And it starts talking because it detects the AT flag. So if you Windowize or System Access or use it on the Macintosh, then you have the speech right away, and off you go. It's an awesome product. This is forever changing access technology. We can only look for enhancements and improvements from Apple. I think that's why I made the commitment, because using the iMac, I know that Apple is committed to access technology and upgrades. So, rock on. What can I say?
Indeed. I don't regret my purchase one bit. Love the iPhone. Love it, love it, love it.
You've been listening to Serotalk. Visit us at www.serotalk.com. Send us an email at resources@serotalk.com or leave us a voicemail at 866-997-BLAB-2522. We may read your email or play your voicemail in the next podcast. Join us in 2 weeks as we explore all the internet and life has to offer. Until then, may you have an accessible digital life.